Has anyone else noticed that the world seems to have gone crazy? We look for reasons for the madness, and they're hard to find. There are all kinds of theories about the Middle East and what's going on in that mess. Closer to home, our government is spending money as fast as the Fed can create it for them. Because of that, the euro is at an all-time high against the dollar. And what that's doing is destabilizing the world currency markets. If countries like China started dumping U.S. securities, our economy would collapse like a house of cards. Meanwhile, at home, our constitutional freedoms are being taken away at an alarming rate. We're trading freedom for security, and in the end, we'll have neither one. More and more, every aspect of our physical lives are more insecure and more unstable, to the point that we just seem to be trying to survive to the next day. And to borrow a phrase from Christ, all these are just the beginning of sorrows. So after an upbeat introduction like that, what's my topic? Well, today I'm going to talk about mental preparation for what's coming. Mental preparation. Mr. Lucas touched on this a couple weeks ago. We need to be mentally prepared. Now, that's a very big subject, so I'm going to narrow it down somewhat and maybe approach it from a little different aspect than you might think. But we need to be prepared mentally. How do we do that? Well, number one, we need to remember the commitment that we made to God and Jesus Christ at baptism. We made a commitment when we were baptized. What was that commitment? Well, number one, we gave our lives to God. We committed our lives into God's hands. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 6, starting in verse 19. 1 Corinthians 6 and 19. Paul says, What? Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own? For you are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. So we're not our own anymore. We belong to God, and he bought us with a price. And that price, of course, was the death of Jesus Christ. So at baptism and the laying on of hands, we received God's Spirit. And we were ransomed, and now we belong to God. And we're not free to do as we please. The goal that we're given is great. We have a tremendous potential. And no matter what we go through, it's all worthwhile. But we need to understand that we are God's. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 4, just turn over a few pages, verse 16, 2 Corinthians 4, 16, lay some groundwork here. Paul says, For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, works for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So what we go through now is called a light affliction, as compared to the weight of glory, the goal that is set before us in our future. And this affliction that we suffer, he says, is for a moment. You know, we're told that our whole life is like a fleeting moment when it's past. You know, the older we get, the faster it seems to go. You know, when we're young, we have our whole life ahead of us. And, you know, I used to get out of school for the summer, and it was like an eternity. You know, now the summer is a blink of an eye. So our light affliction, which is for a moment, works for a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. We said at baptism that we would forsake everything to follow Christ. Let's turn to Matthew 10, verse 37. Matthew 10, 37. It says, "He that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that takes not his cross and follows after me is not worthy of me. He that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it." So we know that we need to count the cost, and we should have counted the cost at baptism, and at that time laid down our lives and are willing to forsake everything to follow God. Let's turn to Philippians 3. Philippians 3 and verse 7. This is the attitude that we should have. He says, but what things were gained to me, those I counted loss for Christ. Yea, doubtless, I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung, that I may win Christ. So here Paul is saying that he suffered the loss of everything. You know, he was, you know, an up-and-coming person in the Jewish faith, a Pharisee, a teacher, and he suffered the loss of everything. He suffered the loss of his status in the community. You know, whatever wealth he had, he gave it all up. And he counted it all just as nothing, as refuse, that he might win Christ, that he might have what was set before him as a goal. So we promised God that we would serve him to the death, as many Christians have, and that we would never give up and never quit, that we would do whatever it took to reach that goal. So we need to remember our commitment to God. And as it says in Matthew 24:13, we don't need to turn there, but you know, it says, "He that endures to the end, the same shall be saved." So we need to remember that commitment and never quit and never give up, to always stay in the fight to the very end. The next thing I'd like to talk about is found in Proverbs 4. This might be a little surprising. Proverbs 4, starting in verse 5. Here Solomon says, "Get wisdom, get understanding. Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom, and with all your getting, get understanding." So we need to pray always for wisdom. Why wisdom? Why wisdom as a part of mental preparation? If you look up wisdom in the dictionary, it will give you two definitions. Number one is to be aware of what's going on. Number two is having good sense or good judgment. And we generally think of wisdom as the second, having good sense or good judgment. But I'd like to talk about number one, aware of what's going on. If you look in Vine's dictionary of New Testament words, the word they use for it, the definition of, is insight into the true nature of things. Insight into the true nature of things. Because we need to know what's going on. We need to have the ability to look around and to know what's really going on. Most people are clueless. Sorry. But why is that? The first reason is in Proverbs 9 and verse 10. Turn over just a few pages to Proverbs 9 and verse 10. It says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding." So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Just the beginning. First, you need to acknowledge God. You need to acknowledge that God exists. And most people don't do that. So without the knowledge of the existence of God, you see what's going on around us. You know, in society around us, what is being pushed is that all religion is equal. You know, if you're Christian, fine. If you're Muslim, fine. If you're Hindu, fine. Buddhist, that's fine. But all religion is equal. Well, that's just not true. In the very beginning of insight into what's really happening in the world comes with the acknowledgement of God and the fear of God. To acknowledge that God exists. Without this foundation, people are just lost from the start. You know, if you want to understand what's really happening, you have to understand that God exists and God is in control. Let's turn to Daniel 12. Talks more about this. Daniel 12 and verse 9. God says, "Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end." So the things that Daniel wrote were sealed and closed and were kept secret until the time of the end. It says, "Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand." So the things that take place at the end of the age will be understood by the wise because they have insight into what's really happening. Notice also that it says, "Many shall be purified and made white and tried." You know, we shouldn't be surprised that this is a very trying time. And one thing that we're promised is that we will have trials and that we will have plenty of difficulties to go through to test our patience and test our character. So we shouldn't be surprised about that. So as far as being mentally prepared, the first thing that we should understand as far as wisdom goes is that God is in control. At the highest level of what happens here on earth, God is in control. And we're told that nothing happens that God doesn't know about. It's not like, "Oh man, I wish I'd known that." Now, I know way back when, I forgot even what happened, but Gerald Waterhouse, somebody came to Gerald Waterhouse and said, "Oh, have you heard, you know, what's happening?" And he says, "Well, have you prayed about it?" He says, well, not yet. He says, "Well, you should pray about it. There's no telling what God might do when he finds out." You know, so God knows what's going on. But at the highest level of insight, we understand that God is in control. Nothing happens without God's knowledge. But as we know, there are other spirits and other beings at work here on earth. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 4, starting in verse 3. 2 Corinthians 4:3. says, but if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. So we know that Satan is the god of this world. You know, that's quite a revelation to a lot of people. That Satan is the god of this world. You know, just as, you know, we look forward to the world tomorrow, and the world tomorrow will be a reflection of God's mind, so to speak. You know, God's way and God's mind will be reflected in the world tomorrow. But just as we see that, we see that the world around us is a reflection of Satan's mind and Satan's way. You know, Satan is very competitive. It's a very competitive place. It's a dog-eat-dog. And it's evident that Satan doesn't have a very sound mind, because the world is such a crazy place. Let's look at Ephesians 2 and verse 2. Ephesians 2, 2. It says, wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. So if God hasn't called you out of the world, then you're under the influence of this spiritual power, the prince of the power of the air, Satan, who has blinded everyone's minds so that what we plainly see is not evident to them. You know, this is obvious when you talk to someone who simply doesn't have an interest in religion at all or Christianity. You know, they're just blinded. They don't understand, don't want to know. So our adversary, the devil, is the god of this world and is in control of the vast majority of what goes on here. If you notice Matthew 4 and verse 8, notice Matthew 4 and verse 8. This is when Jesus was being tempted by Satan. And one of the temptations that Satan threw at Jesus Christ is found in Matthew 4, verse 8, where it says, again, the devil takes him up to an exceeding high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. So somehow, whether in, you know, however, he basically said, look at all of this. You know, the Roman Empire was extant then, you know, the vassal kingdoms, you know, Judah and different other areas, and showed them him all that glory. And he said, all these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. Now, it seems like it would have been an easy thing for Jesus to say, now, wait a minute, those aren't yours to give. But he didn't say that. So apparently, Satan had in his power to give these kingdoms to Jesus Christ at that time. It's like, you don't have to go through all that. Just fall down and worship me. You can have it right now. But of course, Jesus wouldn't go for that. But in John 18 and verse 36, we don't necessarily have to turn there, but that's where Jesus said that his kingdom was not of this world. He said, my kingdom isn't of this world. He said, if it were, then my servants would fight that I wouldn't be taken. But for now, my kingdom is not from here. So Jesus' kingdom is not of this world. This world is under the sway of Satan. Now, how does Satan rule? How does Satan rule? Let's turn to Hebrews 2 and verse 14. Hebrews 2:14. Verse 14, for as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood. So he's talking about human beings in general. We're flesh and blood. He also, meaning Christ, he also himself likewise took part of the same. So he came as a human being, as flesh and blood, that through death he might destroy him that has the power of death, that is the devil. So through Jesus Christ coming here, dying and being resurrected, he might destroy him that has the power of death, that is the devil. And then verse 15, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. See, Satan's big gun is the fear of death. You know, we see that all around us. You know, when you're in Iraq and, you know, back under the days of Saddam, what kept you in line? It was the fear of death. And that's how he rules, through fear, intimidation, the fear of death. Let's turn to Matthew 10:28. We're told how to deal with this. This is one of those scriptures where you read it and you go, well, yeah, that's easy to say. It says, fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. So Jesus is saying, you know, they can kill you, but that's all they can do. They can't destroy you because God can resurrect us. So don't fear them that are able to kill the body. And even in that regard, that's another, you know, happy thought, even in that regard, if we were allowed to be killed, you know, it would be something that God would allow. You know, it's like, as God's children, you know, nothing happens to us that doesn't have God's approval. So in that regard, even though it might not be a pleasant outcome, you know, we can have faith that it is our, you know, it's in our best interest in some way. You know, Romans 8:28, that all things work together for good to those who are the called. So another great insight into the true nature of things is that Satan and his demons are very active on this world. You know, we live, you know, we're flesh and blood with a spirit component, but we live in a very spiritual place. You know, the world, you know, people who don't have any of the spiritual insight don't understand the true nature of where we live. You know, this is a very spiritually active place. So on the highest level, God rules supreme. On the next level down, Satan is the god of this world. And under Satan, there's another level, and they are, shall we say, people who participate with Satan in his plan, either knowingly or unknowingly. It's interesting. It was about 2 years ago. I spent about 3 months on the internet studying conspiracy theories. So, and I'm still sane, I think. But it's very interesting that it seems that there are people who understand that Satan is the god of this world and are okay with that. You know, as strange as that sounds to us. Because there are people of influence who are striving for what the image in Daniel 2 was all about, and that's world dominance. And that is, you know, the great image of Daniel started with the head of Nebuchadnezzar and went all the way down to the feet and the toes. And it was all about world domination. And that's still alive and well. There are still plenty of people who want to control everything and everybody. Now, I don't know exactly how that works, but yet this level exists. And from our perspective, to view into that level is very, very difficult. And we don't know exactly how it works. But we can see evidences of it. You know, we can see, you know, a one world movement. I actually spoke on this a couple years ago, but, you know, it's not a closed conspiracy, shall we say. It's more of an open conspiracy. There are a lot of people who want the same thing. There are a lot of people who want global socialism, basically, to where they can control the resources and the people of the world. So there's that level as well. That is greater than, you know, part of their goal is to eliminate borders and, you know, get rid of nations, to get rid of sovereignty. You know, our sovereignty is under attack. You know, we can see that from a lot of different ways. So there's that level as well. So through all of this, one of my last points here, last sections, we need to understand that Satan will try his best to deceive you and me. I mean, we should know going in that he will stop at nothing to deceive us. And he's good at it. He's very good at it. Revelation 12 and verse 9. It shows how good he is at this. See, we tend to be very short-sighted. You know, our lifespan is quite short. Generations come and go of people. But Satan's been around from the beginning of humanity. And he's very good at it. He's very good at deceiving people. He knows how to do it. In Revelation 12 and verse 9, it says, "The great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world." So he has deceived the whole world. He has a religion for every place you go. It's like Sherry and I like to go to Hawaii. But it's interesting that no matter where you go, you know, these islands were out in the middle of the Pacific, you know, untouched by, you know, Western civilization for years and years, but they had a repressive religious system. It just seems like no matter where you go, Satan's there doing his thing. So Satan deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven say, "Now has come salvation and strength, in the kingdom of God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, who accused them before God day and night." So he enjoys access to God's throne at this time. And just as, you know, when Satan came together and God says, "Hey, you know, have you noticed Job?" You know, at the same time, Satan says, "Well, yeah, but have you noticed, you know, this guy?" You know, he says he is a Christian, but look at him. You know, he's the accuser of the brethren. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. So what saves us is the blood of the Lamb. Jesus Christ's sacrifice for us covers those sins that are repented of. God is faithful to forgive us. So Satan will pull out all stops to try to deceive us. We need to be mentally prepared for that. Let's turn to a few scriptures, Matthew 24:24. A lot of these are familiar scriptures, but we tend to gloss over them and maybe not let them sink in this day and age. Matthew 24:24 says, "For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders." So here are people who will, it says they will arise and show great signs and wonders. Now, what would those signs and wonders be? Well, we're not told specifically. You know, signs and wonders. Insomuch that, if it were possible, they would deceive the very elect. See, that's why we need to be cognizant of what's really going on. Because for those who are blinded, when this happens, it'll be have a tremendous effect on them. Then Revelation 13:13. Talks about the same time period. This is talking about when the beast and the false prophet are working. It says, and he does great wonders. Okay, so here's another term, great wonders. So that he makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men, and deceives them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had the power to do in the sight of the beast. So on an unsuspecting population, if someone came, stood up, you know, presented himself as a great prophet and called fire down from heaven, you know, that's impressive. All the while deceiving people. You know, the message is not right, but the sign is there. And then again in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 8. Says, "And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie." So here the terminology again. You know, all deceivableness. You know, what does that mean? You know, that's a strong term, all deceivableness. And here again, signs and lying wonders. See, we'll have to know what's happening when this takes place, to be able to stand through this, you know, whatever it is. You know, most of the time we think we know what this is. I mean, we have a pretty good picture of how we think this will come about. But we need to be prepared for some serious deception. You know, what happened to the Worldwide Church of God in the 1990s blindsided most people. You know, that wasn't something I expected. If you were close enough to the problem, maybe you saw it coming, but most people didn't. And it really blindsided most people. And I really wouldn't be surprised or shocked if we were blindsided again in some way. You know, because when it talks about all deceivableness and lying wonders and all of these kind of things. You know, I'm thinking maybe Satan's smarter than I am. So we really need to be mentally prepared for whatever it is that comes down the pipe. We have to be wise and understand. And the scriptures also tell us to do a few more things to prepare. Let's turn to Luke 17. Luke 17:31. It says, in that day, so here it's talking about time of the end again, he which shall be upon the housetop, and his stuff is in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. In verse 32, it says, remember Lot's wife. It says, whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. That's a theme over and over again. But I think we need to be ready just to walk away from what we have in this life and to remember our commitment to God, that we said that whatever would come, that we would be willing to follow God to the very end. So that's one of the things, you know, one more admonition that the Bible has, is that we need to be willing to walk away from whatever we need to walk away from. And turn over just a few pages to Luke 21 and verse 34. Luke 21:34. It says, take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, so that that day comes upon you unawares. For as a snare it shall come on all of them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. So here's another warning. It says, don't get so wrapped up in the cares of this life that you forget what's really important. You know, we can get so busy just trying to survive that, you know, you don't stick your head up to look around and to really take stock of you know, your life, and to watch. So we need to take heed that we don't just get wrapped up in the cares of this life. Then Isaiah 55 and verse 6. Isaiah 55, 6. This is another key that we need to key in on here. It says, seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he's near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. So we need to seek God while he's near. You know, now, right now, we have relative peace, relative safety. We seem to have some time to grow. And it takes time to develop a relationship with God. It takes time to develop relationships. So now, while we have time, is the time to develop a close relationship with God and to grow in the grace and the knowledge of Jesus Christ. You know, we need to remember the parable of the 10 virgins. You know, before the call was made, there were 10 virgins. At that point, could you tell the difference between the 5 wise and the 5 foolish? Probably not. It wasn't until the call came, and then it was too late. You know, we need to seek God while he may be found, and call upon him while there is time. That's one of the admonitions that's given, and definitely worth heeding. So we can't let the time slip away. We have to become prepared now while we can. Now, there's plenty more that could be said. We need to put on the armor of God. I didn't mention that, but that's definitely something to read and to consider. Everything is so interconnected that it's hard to separate one from the other. But my purpose today is just to remind us all of the seriousness of the situation that we're in, you know, and that we have committed our lives to God, and that we have promised to endure to the end and to do whatever it takes to enter into that straight gate, to enter into the kingdom of God. And no matter what we have to endure, no matter what comes our way, it's all worth it to be there when Jesus Christ comes back to this earth and ushers in the world tomorrow.